You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce the Earth Station Trek crew, Keith Johnson.
Greetings and felicitations.
Alan Seiler.
How's it going?
And Veronica Daschle.
Hey.
All right, so this week, what we do, we usually try to start off each episode with a little bit of news coming from the Trek universe, but this week, oh my God, there was so much stuff that came out. So we're just going to devote our entire episode to the past week's news.
Woohoo!
So we are recording this episode on March 2nd. And there was like a new announcement that came out just today.
Yes.
So we're going to start with the big news story for the past week. And that was the release of the first image of our main cast for Star Trek Prodigy, the brand new animated show that's destined for Nickelodeon and Paramount Plus.
Yeah, Paramount Plus first, turns out, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was always, you know, like said as a co-production with Nickelodeon, and that it was going to be like developed for Nickelodeon, like they're reaching a different, like a new audience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the part of the announcement was that it's going to air first on Paramount Plus and then on Nickelodeon, which is, I didn't expect that.
I'm very excited because we don't have Nickelodeon.
Yeah, I was looking into how to get Nickelodeon.
Right.
It's sort of now the opposite of the people who complained about putting Star Trek behind a paywall. Like, I don't want to pay for cable just to watch this one show. So you should put it on your streaming service.
Right, exactly.
I don't think I've even paid attention to Nickelodeon since back when they had Avatar The Last Airbender. So I don't even need to seek it out. I have it, but I don't seek it out at all.
Well, I spent a lot of the last 14 years watching TV with a little girl. So I've been in and out of Nickelodeon over the years and those type of shows. But and now, as luck would have it, she's a little bit old for the type of show I think they're doing for it to really catch her attention.
Yeah.
But it caught my attention, though. I'm not too old yet, apparently, because this is really intriguing, this image.
Yeah. So what do you think about it? We have six characters, all apparently, you know, in the teenage range.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start at the left.
Okay.
You got the image pulled up?
I do.
Yes.
We have some kind of robotic something or another.
Yeah, my first thought was robot, kind of Star Wars-y.
Yeah.
But the more I look at it, it looks almost like there's something inside there.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe an energy being, or maybe this is like an environmental suit of some kind.
Could be.
It's Kosh from Babylon 5.
Oh, wow.
The one hand looks rather humanoid.
Yes.
Yeah, the whole thing looks sort of junkyard assembled.
It very much does. Exactly right.
And I was actually just now looking at it, I was thinking the body head area looked kind of like a peanut hamper.
She's back.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peanut hamper lives.
I mean, she's probably just floating on in space somewhere, but yeah.
Yeah, she found legs.
Well, it's interesting, though, because, you know, when Discovery started, there were all sorts of sort of unexplained background characters. Mm-hmm. One of them turns out to be Arium, who, before we ever knew her name, my friends and I just referred to as Robot Girl.
Yes.
And then there's a dude who looks like he came from Daft Punk.
Yep.
So, you know, and this is interesting because it's yet another sort of robotic kind of character we don't know anything about going into.
Right. They also introduced the Dot Sevens on Discovery.
Right.
And have continued that forward. And you did the little Ephraim and Dot animated short. So they're bringing a lot more robots into Star Trek than what we're accustomed to.
Well, you know, they take a look at BB-8 and they're like, you know what, droids sell, so we need some droids.
That's right.
Keith, what's your reaction to the robot-ish person?
It looks really cool. And here's the funny thing. I knew almost nothing about Prodigy until I saw you guys texting about it, to your post about it. So I hadn't even seen the image. when you were posting about it. Mm-hmm. So when I looked at the image, I was completely caught off guard. And, you know, God forgive me, but I swear for some reason I was expecting to see something from Filmation that looked like the original animated series.
we could only be so lucky.
Right.
Yeah. So when I saw the image, I was fascinated by it. And it's so funny you talk about the robot, because one of the things that I've been meaning to post about and talking about is how weird it is that Star Trek, which is a show that's based on supposedly realistic science, has no robots. Mm-hmm. Has very, very, very few robots. No real android servants other than Data. You have the holographic doctor. But it's always been interesting to me how you have the Star Wars world, which is ostensibly based on at least part mysticism and magic, and it is just chock full of mechanics and robotics, mm-hmm. and cybernetics. But you have the Star Trek world, which is ostensibly based on technology, and there's nothing. I've never seen robots in Star Trek, really. Just every now and then you've got the exocomps.
Yeah, Flint's robot and the exocomp.
Yeah.
But usually they're in that little floating ball on a string type robot.
and you gotta think about it, like, consider, yeah, like what happened with Picard and the robotic synths. Intelligence, the synths.
Yeah.
And I think personally a lot of people think that way, if they don't want sentient robots that are going to take over the Earth. So for me, I feel like that's why Star Trek didn't go that way.
I think a lot of it might be because Lost in Space was on at the time.
That's true.
Lost in Space started a year before Star Trek and was very robot heavy. You know,
right. Yeah. Do you remember, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but do you remember when the robot first premiered on Lost in Space and he was awesome?
Yes.
I don't know if you remember, he could read minds. He could actually, he had telepathy.
I remember it in reruns, Keith.
Yeah. He could read minds and he was menacing. Dr. Smith programmed him to kill. So I do think that, and I think also a lot of this is still kind of the heritage of Gene Roddenberry, because Roddenberry was always about humans doing everything. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's weird, but in almost every Star Trek series, almost every captain or commander or crew member, they have almost a really weird fascination for the past. In Voyager, Tom Paris is going to the movies in a convertible, eating popcorn and watching a black and white television. Sisko talked about on Deep Space Nine, wanted to get this little house and next to a river. Kirk was somebody who looked back. It's almost as if they still carry Gene Roddenberry's vision of, no matter how far humans go and no matter how technologically advanced we get, we're still humans, and that's most important. And I think that's another reason why we don't see robots. It's almost like they want humans to do everything. It's really weird to me. And so I'm really fascinated about what this robot can do. My biggest nightmare is that we end up with a cutesy robot character in Star Trek. And I hate to be that person, but maybe.
Star Trek needs a BB-8.
You think so?
I think it needs a baby Spock. Oh my gosh.
That would just make me roll my eyes. I was borderline with the robots on Discovery when they were kind of sort of acting cute. I thought, oh my gosh, please don't do this to Star Trek. And I'm not that guy who holds on to old times. I'm good flowing with the times. I think that's something that I would really have to get adjusted to if we have really cute robots in Star Trek. But I'm open to anything.
Yeah, I'm not big on cutesy robots in Star Trek either. Unless there was a planet of cutesy robots that joined the Federation.
Yes.
There you go.
You know, then I'm okay, because then they're aliens.
Right.
This guy, I mean, it could be a robot, but it looks less like a light on the front of the face and more like you're looking through a little porthole and there's something glowy inside there, which would be pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, true.
You think it might be a small creature inside it?
Small creature or an energy being? I mean, who knows? That's
the
mysterious element, you know?
That came back in Lower Decks. What's it called?
Exocomp?
No, the blue shiny thing that made the little tricorder for.
Yeah, that wasn't anything back. It was just sort of a riff on the old, like, original series style glowy aliens.
But
to your point about if it could be something inside, that'd be shades of shows like Men in Black. I don't know if you ever watched the Men in Black animated series.
Sure. Yes.
You know, the movies, but you know, that was always a thing. You'd always have this huge honking thing, and then inside there'd be a creature this big, you know, just a tiny worm-like creature. Mm-hmm. Inside.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. So moving to the right, we have a sort of grungy looking character who maybe a Tellarite.
That was my first thought. Yeah.
Yeah. He sort of got some like tusk action going on.
Yeah. Sort of like the warthoggy Discovery Tellarites.
Yeah, yeah, but, exactly. And it looks like he's just stepped out of a junkyard.
Right.
Sure,
or underneath,
like, super old school junkyard.
Or sort of been underneath working on something.
Exactly.
Like a mechanic. Right.
He's going to be the repair guy. He's going to be the gearhead.
But I saw it pointed out, someone said this looks like a Talaxian to them. And the more I look at it, the more I'm coming around to the Talaxian.
Hmm.
You sort of look at his nose, look at the side of his sort of temple. He's got those sort of mutton chops on the side.
Yeah.
He's got the spots on his chest. Very Neelix-y.
He has a tusk.
He does have a tusk, but I mean, we've got to make allowances. This is a cartoony version. So, yeah. I mean, maybe his mom was a Talaxian and his dad was a Tellarite.
There you go.
That would be interesting.
Like that.
And, you know, one thing we didn't mention, everybody kind of knows this now, but Prodigy is sort of a Captain Janeway show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She is going to be the, like, you know, adult in charge. We don't know what role she's playing in this story, but it would be interesting if this is related in some way to Talaxian, since we have Janeway, you know, on board. I think that's going to be a really interesting relationship.
These could all be Delta Quadrant aliens.
That's the things that she brought home.
So we don't know what time period it is, right? Because all we know about Janeway is that she became an admiral after the series.
Right.
Thing about that, so she could be a commandant at Starfleet Academy now or something. Right, like
exactly.
That. Yeah, the clues we have are that Janeway's there and that O'Connor shows up, which sort of gives us a general time frame, assuming they're not both holograms or 120 years old.
O'Connor.
But I think this guy's
talking about some of the Star Trek episodes you really don't ever want to see again.
I was watching it last night, actually.
There you go.
But this guy, I think, I mean, this is not a stretch, but clearly a mechanic. He's even got a little wrench emblem on his little mechanical looking arm.
Yep.
Modern day looking wrenches, which is interesting, like Earth wrenches, but, you know, we'll see.
The thing that's hanging on his belt looks incredibly similar to, I was watching a couple of Enterprise episodes last night, and there's a tool that Trip used twice. And it looks just like that. And I cannot remember the name of it.
That's a little vice looking thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I see that. You're right.
It's a something caliber.
Okay. Well, I think we could probably speculate this guy's the engineer of the
group. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
He's greasy.
That means there's going to be jokes about self-sealing stem bolts somewhere in this episode, this show.
There has to be.
That's fine with me. So our central figure is looks female, very slender. Tall, sort of wraith-like.
Yeah, very regal.
What are we reading on her? Assuming it's a her.
You say wraith, I thought about Wraith from the Stargate series.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What I thought too. Yes, okay, good.
Really?
We're on the same page.
And then I thought elves from Lord of the Rings movies, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, she's kind of got a Legolas look about her.
Yeah,
so I wonder if she's going to be ultimately end up being some kind of, I don't know, some kind of thief or somebody who's good at stealth or something like that.
That has escaped or is, you know,
this
character has a very different look to the clothing than the other characters.
Yeah. And a very like, this is a stance and I am in charge and I know what to do type of.
Yeah. This is the hero of the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the D&D game, she would be a ranger or something like that.
But also looks like a different sort of social class than the rest of them.
Yeah.
You know, like the prince or princess of a planet or something that winds up with this motley crew. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's interesting. I had not thought about that.
And now,
that's a good point. She has kind of a confident way she's standing.
Right.
Good point. I hadn't thought about
that. And like you said, that's assuming this is a she. I know Billy Campbell talked about the little hints that he gave about his episode was that the lead female sort of goes gaga for his character, much to the chagrin of the lead male. Which I assume this is this character, but really looking at this character and the next one, that could go either way, I think, as far as which one's male, which one's female. They're sort of at that age.
Yeah.
Where really that could go either way. And I'd have a hard time picturing this character just from this one image going gaga over O'Connor.
Yeah, I agree with that. It doesn't seem to fit the personality that one image that we're seeing conveys.
Right. But the character next to it, the next one we're going to get to, I could see that. You know, so it could be that we've got the genders flipped, you know?
It's very possible. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next person seems like the, I don't know, sort of the troublemaker, the renegade, the, you know, the precocious one.
Sure, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, kinda definitely sort of the funny character, sort of jokey character.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, the arms crossed, a little bit of a smirk on the face.
Right.
And almost here she is swag. Purple, Veronica. Yes. That should appeal to you.
Yes. Veronica likes purple things. Is this one of the first purple aliens in Star Trek?
There was a purple alien in Journey to Babel in the crowd scenes.
No, I don't count that.
And don't forget Boimler's hair.
Boimler's hair. Those sort of fishy aliens on the moon on Lower Decks were purple. Not a lot of purple aliens, but sort of in there.
I'll count this one as the first official one.
The first main character.
First main character that is there you purple. Go. Yes.
Is it purple or is it just lighting?
It could just be lighting.
I don't know. Who knows?
It looks pretty purple to me in this picture.
Yeah, yeah. It does. A lot of purple.
Okay, so the big, tall, rocky, like the thing from Fantastic Four, it's in overalls. Yeah. What are we thinking here?
He looks kind of like Baymax.
It does kind of look like Baymax.
There we go. This okay, I want to use the right word.
Of the show, I'm going to predict.
Yes.
He's the what?
The Groot of the show.
Oh.
Sort of the big, adorable one that everyone loves and has funny things to say.
What if he ends up being, or she.
Could or be she. Could be.
What if this person ends up being like the intelligent one?
Could be.
I was thinking the same thing. That often happens too.
Live the expectations.
Yeah. The Freddy cat of the group.
True. That's true.
It has good. Those like kind of scared, I'm not sure of this eyes almost.
Yeah.
I definitely think nice because of the upraised hand, like he or she is saying, hey, yeah, how you doing? So seems like a very nice person.
At the back, it almost looks like either a backpack of some kind or a shell.
Yeah, backpack is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know of a race that looks like that in Star Trek. I mean, you've got the Horta, which is completely different.
Yeah.
You've got the Excalibians.
Yeah.
The Excalibians, but they were just rock.
They were rock and then sort of turn into like a claw rock.
Yeah, creature. Remember the Savage Curtain that I don't know. That one with Lincoln and all them, but then they didn't get up and walk around like this. I don't think we've ever seen an alien that looks like this in Star Trek.
But this looks almost more reptilian rock, like sort of rugged reptilian looking to me.
Hmm. I was thinking, and I can't remember the name of the character. It's in the New Frontier novels.
The Brickar.
The Brickar, that's it. And I can't remember the character's name, but I was thinking this is a more extreme, you know, interpretation of that idea.
Could be.
Interesting.
Maybe a Voth. I'm going to say Voth, that's dinosaur people.
That's fair.
I can see this being a dinosaur person. And so I'm just going to go out there with it. Voth.
There you go.
You heard it here first.
Exactly. And then standing next to him or her is a sort of gelatinous being.
Oh, yeah.
Purple and blue. Yes.
A jello dolphin.
Yes.
So I don't think there's much that we can say about that other than it's got black eyes.
Yeah. Looks kind of aquatic.
So very interesting collection of very unrecognizable elements.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can't pin down any one of these into any one of the known Star Trek races. And I think that's a really, really surprising direction for them to go.
Yeah. If someone has shown you this picture out of context and said, what franchise is this from? How long until you guess Star Trek?
I would never. Not.
No.
Never.
Yeah, I would not have thought.
I would have guessed the video game or some kind of D&D kind of fantasy novel or something. I would never guess Star Trek for this.
Right, exactly. Because you would think that they would have at least one thing that anchored you. You know, that's that said, even if it's just having a Vulcan and you see the pointy ears and you think, okay, so this must be Star Trek.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the shield or a ship or something. But you're right. There's nothing that screams Star Trek. And that little protoplasmic guy reminds me of the character from the Orville. The one that's always the wisecracker. That's in love with the doctor.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
If we find out that Norm MacDonald is doing the voice, then we'll know something's up.
Right.
I think the character design is really good on these, though.
I really do, too.
One image, I feel like I'm getting a sense of the personalities of these characters. They're all very distinct. Mm-hmm. They all have very different, you know, their stance, their facial expressions, the way they hold themselves, their look. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really enjoying the amount of detail in each one of these characters.
Zach Cabron. I just thought of it. Zach Cabron was that character from New Frontier.
Oh.
The brick car. Sorry.
Yeah.
On with the show.
Awesome. All right. So we don't know exactly a time frame for Prodigy, but one of the announcements that came out this past week, which was part of this, was confirmation that Discovery Season 4, Lower Decks Season 2, and Prodigy would all be taking place this year.
Yeah.
So we know that, I mean, unless they're going to do another, you know, like this past year, they did 10 episodes of Lower Decks into 13 episodes of Discovery back to back. So we had 23 right. weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. If they do something like that, where all three of these shows are like, you know, pieced together, that's going to be kind of a nice stretch. Or do you think that they will space them out a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I don't think they're going to space them out, because I mean, you'd think that's what they would do to like keep people subscribed, but right. I think they're not going to worry about that quite so much, because they just did the Paramount Plus discount, and anyone who's really going to go for it is going to get that significant discount, and they're just going to be like, all right, here's stuff. We're going to throw it out to you just a little bit at a time, so you have plenty of time for Star Trek, is right. what I think they're going to do.
Right.
So, something that I had heard that I forgot to go look for a source on it before the podcast was that Alex Kurtzman was quoted as either Alex Kurtzman or the lady whose name I just forgot, who's over the original programming for Paramount Plus, had talked about having one out each quarter, which would make sense to me from a business perspective, is that you want your quarterly revenue. You know what I mean? So you get the Star Trek each quarter, but also, you know, if you've got two Star Trek shows, that's one audience. Why would you want to play both at the same time? You know what I mean?
I don't think both any all of them at the same time. I think it would be like they did with Discovery and Lower Decks.
Yeah. So I would expect, I mean, what is it? March now.
So first quarter is about over.
Yeah. Before the end of Q2, I would think that you'd get Prodigy out there.
I think so too.
Lower Decks. And then, I mean, they had said already that Discovery was going to come out in 2021, but I didn't believe them. I figured with the COVID and everything, it'd be 2022 at the earliest. But they're doubling down on it and announcing it now with all their investors and stuff. So at the very least, even if it's December 31st, the show starts, they're going to have something out in 2021.
Right.
Maybe they've just streamlined their work at home process to the point that they're confident in it.
Right. And I think that the thing that took the most time for season three for Discovery was producing the score.
Right.
Because, you know, anybody who is an animator or, you know, does special effects or whatever, if they've got the right equipment at home, they can do their work at home.
Sure.
But to make an orchestra record all of their individual parts in their home and then mix the whole thing together, that is a monumental task. Yeah.
But now they're also having to deal with it more on the production side this year, because they'd wrapped filming last year when COVID hit, but now they're having to film with COVID restrictions.
Yeah, so exactly.
Got fewer people on set and that sort of thing. So I would imagine it's going to take longer, but I mean,
it might not. If they have their testing in place, and you know, a rapid result test, and everybody who comes on set, you know, can get tested and they know that they're safe. You know, maybe it won't slow them down too much. Yeah.
But hey, I mean, they say 2021 and they know more than I do. So I'm inclined to believe them, you know,
they've got their plan in place.
Yeah.
So they're saying 2021 for all those.
All three of those.
Yeah.
Huh. That's ambitious.
Yes, I agree. And I do think that one in second, third and fourth quarter makes the most sense.
Yeah.
So but you know, here's the other thing. The one thing that we haven't heard anything about at all is Short Treks.
Right.
They have no mention of Short Treks at all. Are there ones in the works? Are there, you know,
I don't know.
I think they've abandoned the idea.
It'd be weird for them too, because it was just nominated for an Emmy this past year, you know?
Right.
But I feel like if they had that in the works, they would have been promoting it when they're promoting everything else.
Agreed.
But it could just be they took that money and slotted it over to something else. They've got five Star Trek shows in production now, which they didn't have before.
Right.
And I mean, if you've got one coming rapidly on the heels, you don't have quite the need of having the shorts to bridge the gap.
Right.
But I would hate it if they just abandoned that, though, because I think that's a fun way for them to experiment and sort of test out talent and things like that.
Yeah. Right. And I've got a little bit about about Short Treks later on that we'll get to. But as part of this announcement with Discovery, Lower Decks, and Prodigy all happening this year, that means that we can kind of a guess that Strange New Worlds might be first quarter of 2022, mm-hmm. and then the next season of Picard.
Right.
But that a lot of that came out with a new trailer that basically was an advertisement for the Trekverse on Paramount Plus. And if I remember correctly, that's the first time that we've actually seen the, I don't know if this is the official logo. It's kind of like your just your generic Trek lettering, but the first logo that we've seen for Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, you're talking about the logo with the sort of half delta with Strange New Worlds and then Star Trek underneath it, or did they have a different logo in this trailer? I didn't notice.
This one was just plain lettering, you know, your typical Star Trek font that had okay. Star Trek top line, Strange New Worlds second okay. line in larger type.
Yeah, they had not an official logo, but one that was sort of on the like the COVID signs that people had snapped around set and things like that.
Yeah,
they had a Strange New Worlds logo, but yeah, I don't remember what this one looks like.
Yeah,
I was distracted. So, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, totally. So when you mentioned Strange New Worlds, where are they with production and so forth on that one?
They just started production like a week or two ago.
Yeah,
They just started shooting. So that one and Picard both went into production right about the same time.
Yeah, they're on their way. They're filming it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole new world for Star Trek.
It
yeah.
sure is. It's like it's the days of TNG, D&D, and Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, and the movies, and all that.
Yeah, coming out like that. Yeah, it's like a whole new resurgence, which I think is so exciting.
Yeah. Interesting. And I think we probably would already be to the point where we were getting Star Trek year round if COVID hadn't hit, because they were supposed to start filming Picard season two like back in May.
Yeah,
everything got pushed back.
Yeah,
and Discovery got delayed.
Yeah,
but right. I'm actually thrilled about it because that they've said it gave them more time on the scripts, which usually the problems I have are with scripts, you know, with the storytelling, because they get rushed, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they're still writing the season arc as they're filming the beginning of the season and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're in a really good place with Star Trek.
Where, absolutely.
I mean, I love everything they're doing. Everything that I see is exciting, and they want to give it to me year round. So
exactly. So the news. So we were planning to do this episode where we just catch up on all the news that's been released. And literally just a couple of hours ago, we had another new announcement. And that is that Paramount Plus is going to be advertising their new service very heavily on Pluto TV.
Yeah, I think they're calling it Paramount Plus Picks. Is that
exactly
right?
It's going to be a selection of different properties that Paramount Plus is promoting, a bunch of which is Star Trek. So the first three episodes of Discovery, Lower Decks, Picard, and some short treks are all going to be mixed in on this new, and the way the article read, it sounds like it's only going to be on for a month.
Hmm. I'm not sure that part. Yeah.
And then on March 4th, the day that Paramount Plus launches, all of those Star Trek episodes are going to be filtered into the standing Pluto Star Trek channel.
Yeah. I think that's smart though. I mean, give people a chance to sample what's out there. You know, I'm excited that they've got such big plans for Paramount Plus, and it seems like they've got a good plan for making it a more viable streaming service. I mean, CBS Absolutely. All Access has, it's just, if you like Star Trek enough to subscribe, or you don't know it exists, right. You know, that's the only reason I even know that was a streaming service, because they have Star Trek on it.
Right.
But that means that, and for one, it incentivizes them to make Star Trek, because that's the only thing holding up their streaming channel, which you kind of lose as the service grows. But I think it gives these characters and stories a much bigger chance to be part of the pop culture, mm-hmm. and people can actually Agreed. See them.
Agreed. Yeah. This past year, they were showing Discovery season one on broadcast television.
Right.
Which that was a big thing.
Oh yeah.
But you know, the Pluto TV platform has really grown in awareness, public awareness. And, you know, for streaming services, BritBox has been doing exactly this thing. BritBox basically runs a classic Doctor Who channel on Pluto that samples stuff from the 60s up through the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of every episode, you get a BritBox logo that tells you where to go to get more Doctor Who. They've got British Mysteries. They've got all kinds of things that they're doing in different places on Pluto. So I'm really excited to see Paramount Plus joining this. I'm really glad to see that they're investing in this.
Yeah, they've had the Star Trek channel, which seems to only be playing like season one of Next Gen every time I turned it on.
It does get a little bit repetitive. You're right.
I mean, Pluto's free, but I feel like I overpay when I watch these season one Next Gen episodes.
But the article talking about Pluto TV also said that, Cartoon Network?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be showing some Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Yay.
The first episode is going to be plopped into the middle of a, I just forgot the show. They're doing a marathon of whatever it is. And 8 o'clock that night, they're showing the first episode of Lower Decks, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit for Lower Decks.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I imagine once season two, you know, like they did with Discovery season one, once Lower Decks season two comes out, they'll show, you know, season one on broadcast and they'll run it on. But that's the power of having Viacom as your parent. They own all these different properties and you can cross filter all this stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're starting to sort of use that. So like Disney does that. Disney uses the Disney muscle to get their products out there. So I'm glad to see that Viacom's starting to do the same thing. And it's not, you know, the people that CBS service no one has that has the Star Trek shows that no one wants to pay for. you know what I mean? Like, you
know, that CBS service nobody has.
But yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. The commercial you're talking about, it was kind of a strange commercial. There was some, you know, for one, they had Alex Kurtzman narrating it, which seemed like an odd choice. I guess he's sort of getting himself a little more front and center on it. Then the, you know, when the Voyager theme started playing sort of randomly in the middle of it, did you
hear that? Yeah. There was a Voyager theme and then there was something else. Was it a bit from DS9? But there was a mix of different themes, which I thought was really cool because it's advertising, you know, this is the home of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah. And they use some clips, the HD clips of DS9 from the DS9 documentary, I think, just to troll me.
Yeah, that's a little deceptive.
Yeah.
Unless they're going to invest in HDing the whole of DS9. Oh, I know. Oh, man.
I will subscribe amazing. Forever if you put HD DS9 on there.
Steelbook.
You know? I'm with you 100%.
I want Steelbook DS9 Blu-ray box set.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hold your breath for that.
I'm with you. Okay, so we talked a little bit a minute ago about Short Treks, and a really interesting thing that's been happening over on Twitter for the past year, but it's really started to amp up a lot in the past week or so, is that Robbie Duncan McNeil is really sort of spearheading this campaign to get a Captain Proton series produced.
Mm-hmm.
Either as short, like the old 1950s serials that you would see in front of full-length movies, or as a short trek.
Yeah.
I think that's incredibly exciting.
Really, I just wanted to do it so Ethan Peck can play Leonard Nimoy's character from Invasion of Zombies of the Stratosphere, because I think that'd be a great way to bring that around.
That's a little twisted.
The fun of that sort of thing is letting the different actors from Star Trek play different parts.
Yeah.
You can start bringing in the new actors and letting them ham it up and have fun with it. And I'm on board. I'd watch it.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing when they did The Bride of Chaotica. I wouldn't mind seeing that come back. Kate Mulgrew was really good when they drafted her to go into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the episode when the energy beings came in and thought that the hologram was real.
What an alien.
Yeah, that was just really great. That would be very interesting. How far? I listened to the podcast, the Delta Flyer, that they do, and he had been talking about it. So is this right now? This is just in stages of just putting it out there in the world, right?
Yeah, basically, it's just them basically convincing the world how much they really want to do this, and trying to get Alex Kurtzman on board of like, you should actually produce this. I'm in love with the idea. That would be just an incredible amount of fun.
They have a good chemistry because they're friends in real life, Garrett Wong and
Robbie. Yeah, definitely.
They're absolutely friends, as a matter of fact. I know very recently, well, in the last few couple of months, maybe a couple of weeks, Robert Duncan McNeil proposed to his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he was pinging Garrett Wong to say, Garrett, pick up. And Garrett was like, I'm in the bed and I just woke up and I don't want to be bothered. I got bedhead. And he didn't want to FaceTime him. and then so he finally picked up the phone and he told him that he had proposed to his girlfriend the night before. He was up in, I think Robert Duncan McNeil is still living up in Canada right now. That's where he's been filming Resident Alien. He moved to Canada. Mm-hmm. I didn't know until listening to them that he lived here in Atlanta. I had no clue that he lived here. He just sold his house and moved up there just a few months ago.
Oh, yeah. That's disappointing.
Yeah.
He sold the house and he has an RV. He loves RVs. He loves traveling around the country. So he sold his house and moved up to Canada just last year to start doing Resident Alien. So they live in, I think in Montreal. I forget where he lives. And yeah, they were talking about that. They have a good chemistry. They're friends. They've gone overseas together to Star Trek shows. They've ever done conventions in Germany together. They basically talk all the time. It's not just the podcast they do. They are truly friends. And so you have a great chemistry. So I think that would work.
Oh, totally.
If Disney can pull off WandaVision, then Star Trek can pull off Captain Proton.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Absolutely. And it would be a lot of fun for them to, you know, because they're buddies with everybody else in Trek. Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It would be fun to get, you know, Connor Trenier or whoever to just come in and play a weird bit part. Oh, I just think it would be an amazing thing to do. I think it'd be so much fun.
Just don't call Robert Beltran because he ain't coming back.
Yeah, he might.
You think?
Because hang out with his friends? Yeah, sure.
Okay, he's so critical. Well, I mean, I know he is critical, but yeah, he would have to be convinced, I think, to do it.
I would totally love to see that. I don't know that I would want to see it as a short Trek. I would rather see it as a sort of independent, non-Star Trek production, so that it has a chance to continue and to grow and to live and do whatever it wants to do, you know?
See, I'm the opposite. I want to see a show about holodeck characters, discovering their holodeck characters and sort of escaping from the holodeck, and like Westworld meets WandaVision meets Star Trek.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. What's your idea? How would you do the premise of a Captain Proton? Because Chuck, what you just said is like, what's his face? The Moriarty character in TNG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who gained sentience and found out later on they had stuck him in memory and hadn't turned him back on for a while and was upset about that. So you're thinking something like that where they Chaotica and the others gain sentience?
Well, if I'm writing fan fiction real quick, then I'm going to say it starts off as a Captain Proton series, black and white. Yeah. We discover as we're watching it that some of these characters are actually like 25th century Starfleet officers who are in the holodeck. Captain Proton starts to figure out that he's not real. It, you know, he learns more, has to face the fact that he's a fictional character. Maybe their starship comes under attack and Captain Proton has to save the day. I think you could do a lot of fun things with playing with the holodeck, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not in charge.
Paramount, this is your new writer right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex Kurtzman, grab your pen.
Right.
Because it's the holodeck. Anything can happen.
Right. And certainly Kurtzman listens to our show.
Absolutely.
Sure. I mean, come on. Who doesn't?
Right.
I just want to see that. I just want to see that looking like it was made from a washing machine robot again. The one with the really, you know, really cheesy robot that would do like this.
Yes.
Why has there never been an action figure of that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love that robot so much.
Yeah, especially because it's an actual public domain. It's Dr. Satan's robot from the mysterious Dr. Satan, who used to show up in old movie serials. Yeah, it's an actual old serial robot.
So that's he just took it back. That robot was responsible for one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in Star Trek. It was real quick. It was the time they forced 7 and 9 to come in there for what she called their juvenile fantasies. And a robot comes toward her and he goes and doing like this. And she just goes, I am Borg. And she just shuts it down. This is really dry statement. And it was hilarious. That's a great concept.
But he was also the source of another funny moment. And when you said that, I thought this is what you were going to say. In the Chaotica episode, the other dimensional characters are coming in. They're invading the thing, and he's like, "Warning, warning! There are dangerous blah blah blah." And Paris is like, "Shh," and backhands him in the face, and he's like, "Warning, warning! There are intruders." I thought that was so funny.
That's a great one. That's a really good episode.
Okay, so I've got one last news item that I wanted to share.
Okay.
And that one is another one from yesterday, actually. It went live, I guess, last night. And so, and that is the new Voyager documentary.
Yep.
They launched the Indiegogo that is going to be crowdfunding this thing. And this is done by the same production company that's done The Captains, that did the DS9 documentary and a few other things, I Am Spock. And they do incredibly good work. And if you've seen the Deep Space Nine documentary,
oh my gosh,
so it is amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It is so incredibly well done.
We got tickets to go see that in the theater.
Yeah.
And then it turned out my daughter's chorus concert was the same night. So Veronica,
I went by myself.
Yeah, Veronica went and saw DS9 and I went to the middle school chorus concert.
Oh, that's good of you.
Yes.
But man, it's so
posters.
Good. So, ah, well. So now they're doing a Voyager documentary, which I'm really excited about. They launched their fundraiser. The goal was $150,000.
How will they get that?
Oh, I don't know. But and I think it must have launched at midnight. By the time I looked at it, 7 or 8 o'clock that morning,
yeah,
they had just about doubled that amount. That's and great. Right now, I just checked. And they're literally like $700 away from $500,000.
Yeah.
$500,000.
There's a Voyager renaissance going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, like a new appreciation of Voyager, I think. It was sort of hated on for a lot of years. And a lot of that was me. But I think people are nostalgic for that type of storytelling now. And really taking, now that it's on Netflix and you can just stream them, I think people are taking another look at Voyager. And you're seeing that. And, you know, we're talking about maybe a Talaxian on Prodigy, you know, Catherine Janeway coming back. Seven of Nine's big on Picard. And they're putting the Voyager theme in the promos. Like,
right, right.
So I think, yeah, just from the production end and from the audience end, I think people are digging Voyager.
Yeah, I was just reading something the other day that says it depends on how the metrics are done, because you never know how the metrics are done with Netflix. But Netflix has reported that Voyager is its top rated stream show of the Star Trek series.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, and they said, and they go, then of course that goes into whole, what's the definition of watching? Because I think depending on how they look at it, you only have to watch 6 minutes of something for them to say you watched it. You could watch 6 minutes and say it's crap and then turn it off. But you know, we don't really know what they're doing. But the bottom line is it's if it's not 100% the most watched Star Trek series on Netflix, it's really up there. And they recently did a top 10, Netflix did, the top 10 Star Trek episodes that have been watched on Netflix, and something on order of 6 of them were Voyager episodes.
Oh, wow.
That's very surprising.
Yeah. And evidently, and I wonder if it's like me, I'm in the middle of a Voyager rewatch. I'm on season 6 now.
So you're the one that's getting their numbers up.
Yeah, it may be. But you know, what's interesting is alone among all the Star Trek series, the only one I can still find episodes of Voyagers I never saw, because it was my least favorite of the Star Trek series. That doesn't mean I disliked it, but it was my least favorite. And so it is literally the only Star Trek series where I haven't watched an episode 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. You know, go back to the original series, something like Balance of Terror or Obsession. I literally watched those shows 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 times in my life. No way about it. There are episodes of Voyager, and I'm going, I've seen 10 minutes of this. And it's kind of exciting. And so, I am watching it. It's new to me. Voyager is actually a new track to me. And I know I've been reading some stuff online. A lot of other people the same way. It's like they haven't really watched all of Voyager before. And so it's new. And I'm actually liking it more, which is interesting. I think if I can, there's things I don't like about Voyager still. But there's a family dynamic that I like. And I'm always saying this is another great opportunity for a podcast that we could do. And I'm really, really, really liking Kate Mulgrew as Captain Janeway.
Man. I love her.
She's starting to get up there where I'm starting to have a debate between who's the best Star Trek captain as in terms of an actor. And that's a tough one. When you put her against Avery Brooks and Patrick Stewart, I got to tell you, Kate Mulgrew can act.
Oh yeah.
And I'm amazed. So
man, she's a presence on that show.
She really is. And she's so good. She's good with humor. And they just did an amazing thing with her. I don't want to go off on a tangent, but they did an amazing thing having the first female captain featured. And then did that thing that which could have become irritating and cliched, which is make her motherly and matronly and compassionate and all the things that could have become cliches and stereotypes. But it works. It just makes sense. I have never once thought, oh, well, they made her act like that because she's a woman. Right. I just thought that's the kind of person she is. And she's got a spine of steel. And again, just looking online, I have seen other people saying that. They'll say, gosh, I've never really watched Voyager on this level. So I think that must be healthy. And I think you're right. There's a thirst for it. And even those who haven't watched a lot of Voyager, then you hear the reputation that some people say, well, it kind of sucks. And it's all a 7 to 9 show, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So that I think it's a great opportunity for that.
Well, bringing it back around, people were sort of hammering. I forget the last name. Is it the Hagerman brothers that are doing the Prodigy series? I mean, I'm probably butchering their last name, but people were badgering them on Twitter about where's Janeway, where's Janeway? And their response was, come on, if we showed you Janeway, that's all you'd be talking about. Right. Of why they put the other right. characters out first. But
right.
I'm intrigued to see which version of Janeway we get. Is it Janeway as she appeared on Voyager? Is it, you know, white-haired Admiral Janeway like she was in the future? Is it Nemesis Janeway? A lot of directions that could go.
I agree. And it's going to be really interesting to see how she portrays the character differently, too, mm-hmm. after this much time away from her.
Yeah.
Right.
Just and at the same time, how differently is she written, you know, at a different stage of her life? I think it's going to be really neat to see. I think that Janeway was an amazing character, and I think that Kate is an incredible actress, and I think that it's going to be really fun to see revisit this character and to see how much she's grown and changed and how time has sort of tempered her. I think it's going to be really great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I know that she read the autobiography of Catherine Janeway, which I have it on Audible. I just haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. So, I mean, that'll really be the first time I've heard her play Janeway since Nemesis. For as much as she played Janeway in Nemesis for that one scene on the view screen. But,
right.
But I mean, I guess she's getting a lot of practice playing Janeway now. You know,
was that the scene where she's on screen for 5 seconds and Picard pretty much had to tell us it was her because he goes, Admiral Janeway? Is that the scene you're talking about in Nemesis?
Yeah, he didn't have to tell me, but maybe for the casual audience.
Yeah, it was kind of weird the way he said it. It was like, hey, look at this. This is Admiral Janeway. It was just weird the way he just kind of spoke her name out there.
Ladies and gentlemen, Catherine Janeway.
Exactly. That book that autobiography you're talking about, Chuck, have you listened to any of it?
I haven't listened to it yet. I got it on Audible and I just haven't had a chance to play it yet. So I've got that and I've got Nicholas Meyer's audiobook both on my Audible, but I haven't played them yet.
Because I know nothing about the story of what happened to Voyager after they got back to Earth. Nothing. I don't know anything about it.
Aside from the novels, no one does, you know?
Yeah. I haven't
read the novels. We've got some novel news as well, don't we? the literary verse, or the lit verse, as they call it, sort of that began with the DS9 relaunch, where they brought DS9 back as if it was a new season of the show with new characters and new storylines, and they continued that on once Nemesis happened, all the shows. So a Next Generation novel, you're following Picard and First Officer Worf and a whole new crew, you know, on the Enterprise E, and they've sort of progressed the ongoing Star Trek universe over the last, I don't know, 15 years. But now that it's back on television, and, you know, obviously it contradicts what's happening on the shows, they're bringing that to a resolution with this trilogy of novels called Coda that's coming out later this year, which I've been in and out of it. I have a hard time with you know, big expansive crossover properties where you have to follow 14 lines of books to find out what happened. But I've sort of hit some hot spots along the way and been in and out of it. But I'm intrigued to see how they wrap that up. And I'm thrilled that they're giving them the chance to do that. They could have just said, mm-hmm. well, those books don't count. We're doing these books now. But they're actually giving them a chance to wrap up that storyline in that universe. And from what I've heard, it sounds like there's going to be some sort of, big sort of universe reset drama happening, you know, where maybe that timeline gets erased or something along those lines. But I know there's Star Trek fans who have been following that, you know, for 15 years following that storyline of the Star Trek universe, who are sad to see it go. And mm-hmm. But like I said, I'm glad to see that they're getting the chance to bring it to a resolution.
Yeah, I think they were probably like, I remember a lot of fans were really upset with all of the stuff that they retconned for the last three Skywalker.
You talking about the, with the Star Wars?
Yeah, with Star Wars. Did I say Star Trek?
You did. Well, I don't know what you said, but that's what I heard.
That's what was in there, everyone's head.
But yeah, you follow the novels for 30 years, and then they do something else in the movies, and it's got a lot to live up to. But it's the same sort of thing with Star Trek, where you've got the two competing continuities, and they don't want to have that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's easier to solve in Star Trek, because there's already been this whole, oh, this timeline doesn't exist anymore thing.
Yeah. Okay, so is that all we have on news?
No. Yeah.
There's more?
What do you have, Ron?
Lower Decks Blu-ray release date.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when is that, Veronica?
May 18th.
Yep.
Oh, I'm remembering this off the top of my head, guys.
That's awesome.
Chuck shared it on Facebook earlier, and so I messaged him. I was like, so are we getting the Blu-ray on Steelbook or regular Blu-ray? And we often wait until they're at, like, the second chance stores and get them at a discount, but we're like, nope, we're getting this now.
Yeah, I like Lower Decks enough that I say we buy it new.
Yeah.
It's a fun show, and I'm looking forward to all the bonus features and things they have on there. There's supposed to be a bonus feature where they're sort of freeze framing and talking about all the Easter eggs. So that...
Oh, nice.
You need to kill
that
a
would
week.
Be fun.
You can watch that.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
I wonder if that's a hint as to when season two will air, because, you know, a lot of times the season one DVD will come out sort of around the same time as when season two airs on broadcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind an Easter egg thing. I mean, heck, they could do 15 minutes just on the Okudagrams on the.
Absolutely true. And maybe one of the special features will explain what the hell that weird module is that's between the warp. Oh, I got Keith's button right there.
So finally, Keith can sleep at night.
I swear, Alan, don't lie. I was watching an episode of Lower Decks last night, and I remember you guys telling me to get over it, and I was just sitting there going, I can't get over that stupid down there. So I can't believe you just brought that up. I just want to see.
Maybe it'll do like an animated walkthrough of the ship.
Yeah.
They'll show you where the turbolift goes.
Right. You always expect to see something like an episode of Futurama where you literally see a glass tube drop down and somebody just drop down. You know, one of the most common sci-fi tropes where somebody just floats through a glass tube.
Yeah.
You always see something like that.
Well, it's funny though, on the 32nd century ships, they don't even have none of the modules are attached. So
yeah. Right. Right.
It's evolution. Oh, yeah. It's the universe evolving.
There you go.
That's interesting.
All right. Well, if you want more Star Trek news, we posted a lot on our Facebook group at Earth Station Trek on Facebook. We got a pretty active presence there. Get some good conversations going. So make sure you drop in there, join the group. And if we missed anything, let us know what it is. And Alan, where can people find you on the internet?
In all the dark corners. but mainly find my, I'm in the Hulanta group and page. I'm on, you know, various Star Trek ones. I've got my publishing company, which is Cosmic Press. That's K-O-Z-M-I-C Press. Find that on Facebook, Twitter. And I have an Instagram, but I don't ever do anything with it. So, you know.
And how about you, Keith?
You can find me mostly on Facebook, all the Earth Station all the Earth Station groups you can find me part of. I have... like Alan, I have a tweet and Instagram that I pretty rarely use. So basically find me on Facebook.
And what about us, Veronica?
Feltnerdy.com. If you like Star Trek and puppets, check us out.
That's right. And we'll see you guys next time. Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun on our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
Here at the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, we make every show from the finest ingredients.
Juicy interviews, fiery film nights, delicious desert island DVDs.
And pack it all into a slice of life in every episode.
Order up our specials now from your delivery guys.
Sean from Canada.
Dan from Kent in the UK.
And Paul from near Liverpool in the UK.
Here on the ESO Network.
The Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Serving you a slice of life.
Mm-mm.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.